So, I want to be as explicit as I can be up front. We're only here because we want you to come on a retreat with us. Like, but we really do. And the retreat is February 22nd to the 25th. It's in Ojai, California. It is at one of the most beautiful spa resorts in Southern California, in one of the most beautiful, if I'm being kind, spiritual villages, if I'm being less kind, hippie towns, in this part of the world. Ojai is there are all sorts of spiritual traditions that have been based and are still based in Ojai. Krishnamurti being one of the more famous ones, Byron Katie, Gay Hendricks. But there's a tradition that goes back before that. Ojai is where the Shangri-La movies were filmed. It was a substitute for the Himalayas. It is on the right morning at the right time, one of the most stunning places I've ever been. And the retreat came from an ongoing conversation Dick and Natasha and I have been having since they sent me their copy, an early preview copy of the book, their book, Coming Home. And I had just finished my book, The Space Within. And I thought, if I hadn't just finished my book and nobody had read it yet, I would think they plagiarized from me. And if they didn't know that I'd already finished my book, they're going to think I plagiarized from them. And in this cool way that the universe has of doing things, it turned out that we were all three of us inspired to talk about consciousness as a jumping off point for a conversation about the three principles instead of mind or thought, which are the two more traditional jumping off points for this conversation. And since that time, we've just been looking for an excuse to come together and share what we see. And when we talked about what we wanted to call it, we came up with the title Silent Mind, Beautiful Feeling, Experiencing the Heart of the Three Principles. And I want to share what that title means to me and why I thought that was the perfect title. Then I've asked Natasha to share the same and Dickon to share the same. And then we'll talk to you guys about anything. Like, honestly, we'll talk to you about what to have for supper if you want. It's not how I'd use the time. But we'll open it up at that point to anything that's on your mind. So for me, I'm going to actually just take each of the three in turn. So silent mind, one of the biggest, and forgive me, one of the things you'll figure out is I swear, one of the biggest holy fucking mother of God moments for me was when I heard Sid Banks say in a recording, what everyone is looking for is a silent mind. And the reason I think it was such a big deal to me is because firstly, I got the truth of it. It reminded me of a Henry David Thoreau quote that most men spend their entire lives going fishing, not realizing that it isn't fish that they're after. That somehow everything that we're looking for, all the different forms we're looking for in our life, are found, all the questions that we have are answered in that space beyond the noise of our day-to-day thinking, of our psychology. And it impacted me. It impacted me to the point where it became the last thing I thought about when I went to bed at night every night. It became a sort of a focal point, and it changed me. It impacted me. The second phrase, beautiful feeling. Linda Pransky and I once had a conversation. We were sitting at a conference, one of the conferences. There's a lot of conferences now. And we were both filled up with love. We were like just beaming like teenage girls. And she looked over at me and said, we're all really just here to get high. And I went, I know. And it's like, we can turn the principles into the most beautifully logical conversation about how things work. And we can nod sagely at one another and look at the poor people who don't understand that and feel sorry for them, that they are not as enlightened as we are. And a lifetime of doing that doesn't do what one heartbeat of pure love does. I remember in a much more prosaic and adolescent way, my best friend and I in college, and he was a philosophy major, and we would spend the nights talking philosophy. And we would always get to a point towards the end of the night where one of us, it would get quiet. We'd get to that silent mind place, not knowing what it was, but we'd get there. And one of us would break the silence by commenting something to the effect of, you know, if we were getting laid, none of this would matter. Now, that's maybe a more prosaic way of putting it, but I think we were onto something. That all the intellect in the world, no matter how beautiful, is of a different order of beauty than the feelings that are available to us as we go deeper into mind, as we go deeper into consciousness, as we go deeper into the heart of this conversation, the feeling of this conversation. We did the first week of Supercoach Academy, and not on purpose, but in introducing the team, I asked them to share whatever they felt like sharing by way of introducing themselves. And each of them, and maybe it was spurred by whoever went first, but each of them shared at a really deep level, a much deeper. I was expecting to go, hi, I'm Bob, I'm from New Jersey, and I love the principle, right? But it was like they all shared how their lives had been touched and transformed through this understanding. And there were eight of them. So by the time we got to the eighth one, and this was literally the first piece of input for this new group, I was thinking to myself, A, they all look stoned, right? Functionally stoned, but stoned. And B, Jesus, this must sound like a cult. But it only came across that way in my mind because we're not used to just indulging in the beauty of life for its own sake. We're not used to lingering in the afterglow. We're on to the next thing, on to the next thing. And so it's weird. It looks weird to us when people come together to drown in love, to soak in a bath to the point where their entire being is suffused with light. Even though it makes us better at anything we might attempt to do in the world, it makes all our relationships more intimate, richer, more alive. It is that which allows us to create at levels that seem like, gosh, we must be the hardest working people in the world from the outside, even though we're sitting there going, one day I should get off my ass and do something. And even if it didn't do all of that, I don't know about you, but I've gone through enough shit in my life that taking some time out to enjoy a warm bath doesn't really need to have a purpose beyond itself. So that for me is what I want this retreat to be for all of us. I want it to be a 4-day immersion in a warm bath of love and creativity. And if that happens to make everything in your life better, as I kind of know it will, I'm all for it. But if all it does is give you 4 days off to be suffused with God, I'm good with that too. So that's why I'm going. Where are you going, Natasha?
That warm bath sounds pretty good to me. 4 days of being with wonderful friends and diving deep into this, which we love sharing and hearing about, is I can't wait. I was reflecting on like what is the heart of the three principles? What is it at core that we want to people to get a glimpse of? And for me, it has to do with recognizing our true self. It has to do to seeing that we are pure consciousness. And once we realize that who we are in essence doesn't come and go, then everything that our psychological mind does, everything we think, everything we feel that comes and goes the whole time, it doesn't seem to matter that much. Once we rest in this pure consciousness, all thinking dissolves. And that's also where this beautiful feeling arises from. So for me, it's very much about realizing and resting in this unchanging consciousness, really, really seeing, experiencing from within the truth of that. And then just watching as everything that we experience in our life, all the you know, sometimes painful experiences dissolve in that. I was working with a client a few days ago and I said, you know, why did you come? It was the first session. Why did you come? What do you want? He said, I want to come home. And of course, that I like the sound of that. And so all I did the whole session was point him towards that which he already knows, because we all know this at core. We're not teaching anything. We're not trying to show you something that you don't already know. It's more like kind of taking away some of the clouds, some of the thinking that we have, and then recognizing the light from within, the sun that we already are, the consciousness that's always present. And as that started to happen in this conversation with this new client of mine, he just, you know, many times just tears just started running down his face, as, you know, we've seen many times before, just from the recognition, wow, this is who I am. And it's already there. It's already present. I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to do anything. There's not 5 steps or 10 steps I need to follow. There's not a long meditation every day for 1 or 2 hours to make this happen. It's there. Pure consciousness doesn't come and go. Our true nature is always present. We're always home. And the only thing that can cover who we are in essence, the only thing that covers our light, is thinking that we have. So sometimes I think of myself as somebody who just helps people to sort of brush away the clouds that are in front of the sun and until the sun bursts through and they get this glimpse of who they really are. I tear up, he teared up. It was just really beautiful to see how realizing this, even for a glimpse. And I've glimpsed this many times, as I know you have, Michael and Dick, and many of you probably listening right now. And then I forget. And then I get all caught up. About a week ago here on, I'm on vacation on Hawaii right now, and there was a missile scare. We all got a text early in the morning at the same time that a missile was going to come in to the Hawaiian Islands. And that we had 15 minutes to take cover. It was so interesting because my friend who I'm staying with, she was like, oh my gosh, where could we go in 15 minutes? There's no bunkers. There's nowhere we're safe. And I kind of just smiled looking out at this incredibly beautiful north shore of Kauai saying, you know, if it's going to happen, today is a good day to die. All that can ever scare us is our thinking. Nothing had happened. We got a text, and then all this thinking starts to occur. that can, you know, what can I do? What if I die? What will happen to my kids or my home or my job or whatever? And that's what scares me. It's not reality. The reality of that present moment had to do with just sun was shining, sky was blue, the mountains were clear. Such a beautiful day. And most people recognize this when we speak to them about it. They see the truth of that. They see that once you point them towards that fact, that it is true that we create our own suffering by allowing ourselves to get caught up in a future scenario or a past scenario. And once you leave your mind behind, once you leave behind everything you think that you are, all the stories you have about your past, what has happened to you, good and bad, and everything you think about the future, what is left there is your true self. And you start to get this glimpse of the fact that it just is always there. Pure consciousness is what has always been observing or noticing, being aware of everything that's been going on your screen, so to speak. It really does something profound to people when they start to glimpse this. And they start to see that you're not your story. You're not anything that you can think you are. Anything that's happened in your past, it's gone. The present moment is all we have. And it's always the present moment. It's kind of weird to say. I sometimes think, but it's just always now. And the more I can rest into this pure consciousness and see what's going on in the now as something that's being created from this amazing power of thought, the more I don't get gripped so much, the more I can allow myself to rest and not be on this huge roller coaster the whole time. And then I forget, and then I'm up, and then I'm down, and then I remember. So to me, the heart of the principles really has to do with helping people to recognize who they are again and again. And I know from my experience with myself and with clients that I work with that the more we see it, the more often we rest in this space, the more we also rest in it, the more we don't get gripped as often or for such a long time. And then, as Michael said, relationships get better. I become more effective at work. I have more access to my own creativity. Things seem to be easier. So there's also this essence of noticing that this power of thought is not personal. I can have thinking going through my mind, but not take it personally, not take it seriously. And that really helps me to rest more in this space of pure consciousness, this space within, this home that we all have. And that's what I'm really excited about sharing with everyone, the 4 days at Ojai. Just more and more deeply get a sense of this home that's already there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dickin.
The only thing that attracted to me to the principles in the first place was love. I think every question I asked Sid Banks in the 23 years I was with him was about love. And every time he answered in a different way, but pointing toward the same place. If we're talking about the heart of the principles, we're talking about something that's with us in every moment of experience, even when we feel shitty. For me, it's a little bit like when the heart of experience, our essence, becomes more known to us. It goes from background to foreground. Becomes much more evident in every moment of experience. So it's not off in the future. when I feel better. It's always here in every moment. It's just a matter of recognition. That's how I'm seeing it now. I actually love when I feel shitty and I can recognize the heart of this moment and be in it so deeply that there's no story going on, making me feel like there should be something better, different. I used to wait all the time for insights. I used to wait for a better feeling. I used to wait for understanding. Now I realize waiting is just a function of ego. That's all it is. At the instant that I step beyond all that personal thinking or recognize that space, there is no waiting. There is no past. There is no present. There is no future. There's just this. It's so ordinary. If I could get away with it, I would say how to be ordinary in life. That'd be this, instead of the heart of the principles. And I'm not going to promise you anything. Just this, ordinary. Nobody wants to come to a retreat where you learn to be ordinary as opposed to wanting to be something a little bit better, a little bit more special, a little bit cooler, a little bit more fun. God, the discovery of the heart of the principles is the discovery that the essence of our being is always here in every moment. I like a metaphor of a movie screen. Movie screen is like pure consciousness. In every moment, if you look around, in every moment, you're aware of something. In every moment, you're aware of something. Awareness is the screen. It's always here in every moment, no matter what the movie is on the screen. But it's background, so when people watch a movie, the screen disappears. And then there's the drama, the movement, the colors, the feelings, the thoughts. They're all over the place. And people say, oh, I want a different movie. Rather than the moment we recognize the screen is always there and it's untouched, free. Free in every moment. Boy, is my life lightened up now that I'm not waiting for a better experience. Okay, let me share with you one of my favorite words these days. I rediscovered this word because I used to have a very different idea about this word. The word is ecstasy. See, I was always waiting for the kind of ecstasy that was better than this moment. Woo! To be ecstatic for me was an experience. And so I was chasing after, I was searching and chasing after that experience. I wanted that in my life. So I was doing a lot of waiting because I was not often feeling ecstasy. Oh boy, the search. I looked up the meaning of ecstasy. It means standing outside of. The screen, metaphorically, stands outside of experience. When I rest in awareness, rest in consciousness, rest in knowing, it's just a recognition of the screen, and the screen is completely untouched by anything that's flashing on it. When the screen becomes more foreground, the experience I have is to be at peace or at one with whatever I'm experiencing. it doesn't matter then what I'm experiencing. There's a feeling of being at peace with it. Or as my friend George Bransky says, I'm not here to make you comfortable. I'm here to help you be comfortable being uncomfortable. It's a whole different ballgame. If we can be uncomfortable being uncomfortable, in a sense, we can just be ourselves and relax this whole thought-created project of arriving at someplace better in the future. There's no end to that search. There's no end to that. So Sid would say, step before time. And we'd all go, what the hell does that mean? But I tell you, when I wake up to the screen of knowing and are just resting in that, in this moment, as it is, rather than suffering from the limitations of my ideas about what should be, when I'm just being in this moment as it is, there is no psychological suffering. And the feeling is one of being at peace or at one with. The experience of being at one with any moment is this union that's already there. It's the experience of unity of this moment, spiritual and ordinary. The unity of that is love. So we can be in love at any moment. And it's an unconditional love that embraces any experience. It's not dependent upon certain experiences. It's an ecstatic moment where you are outside of identification with your thoughts and feelings that are in the world of form that come and go. So I see this 4 days as, first of all, it's a come as you are party. Doesn't matter how you show up. Because it's not a matter of self-improvement where you become a better version of yourself. It's a matter of recognizing your essential nature in this moment as you are, even when you're feeling shitty. I swear a lot more around Michael. I don't know what it is. I think he's got some kind of contagion factor. You
it's
know?
A gift. So, that's what I think.
Yeah. He's passed that gift on to me. So may we all be delightfully, ecstatically ordinary in this moment as we are, and discover the what we're calling the heart of the principles.
So what do you guys want to talk about? Right? We've made our pitch. We've shared what this is for us and why we love this conversation, why we've devoted our lives to this conversation. Over to you. Then do they know how to raise their little digital hands?
I will tell them that I see so many of my regular people that they should all know how to raise their digital hands. If you go down to the bottom of your screens, there'll be a box that says participants, and then there will be an option to raise your digital hand, which means I will be able to see you and bring you on. And if not, Michael will just pick on people. You know this.
It's true.
Cheers. Let's go to Jackie. Go ahead, Jackie.
Okay, so I'm gonna go low. So I fully expect you guys to like answer high.
Yeah.
Of course I wanna do this. I wanted to do it before it was formally announced and Michael mentioned it somewhere. And here's the thing. I don't have the money. I'm still paying off and doing excellently at it, by the way, in my impersonation of an adult. I'm paying for courses I've taken in the past still, because I put them on credit cards. And I was about to enroll. You do this thing where you can move money into your bank account and there's no interest for a year. And I suddenly realized it's not mine. It's the bank's money. And I would be adding about 6 months of paying off debt in a job I'm trying to get out of and looking at the early stages of starting a new business. And I know it's, I have done the thing where I'll be so transformed out of this, I'll have a different relationship with money and I'll make a lot of money. And that like never happens for me. So I am, you're talking about something like indescribably huge. So I'm sorry to be so small, but that's very solid and real for me. So I will do my best to.
But let me go first, Jeff.
Yeah, Michael. Let me God, go first. I'm sorry.
No, I now this is you know me. You've known me.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, I'm slightly going against type here, and I'm going to make an actual practical suggestion.
Okay.
Which is go on the retreat without us.
Ah.
Spend 4 days in the bath. Because all we're going to be doing for those 4 days is saying to people, you're in the bath, you know. Have you noticed you're in the bath? How's the bath? You enjoying the bath? It's bath time. Now, as it happens, it's remarkably valuable to have three people standing by the side of the bath going, hey, you know, you're in the bath. But it's the bath that does the work. It's love that does the work. It's consciousness that does the work. And so I would never want to encourage somebody to do a program out of a sense of lack or need. Like, if I don't do this, I'm missing out on something that I need. I only want people to come on programs from a place of, oh my God, this works great, let's do it. Mm. And there's something kind of glorious about seeing the ordinariness of it, like Dickens.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't get more consciousness by being able to afford a course on consciousness. Like, it's universal. Mm-hmm. It's ever present. It's home. Mm-hmm. It's kind of who we are, as best I can tell. So that's my two cents. But if you guys have a different two cents, please. I'm looking at Dickon and Natasha's pictures as if they can tell I'm looking at them. I realize that it doesn't work that way, but it's just old habits die hard.
It just makes me think of when I started with this, there weren't courses. It was one book and Sid's words were, we'd go to hear Sid, and his words to us were, go home. Go home. You can't get wisdom from another person. That's not what I wanted to hear, by the way, when I got there. Go home. You can't find wisdom. Don't listen to my words. What you're looking for, you can only find in the quiet workings of your own mind. And that space is always here. Sid used to see people doing these extensive long-term training programs, and he'd scoff at it. And we'd say, well, Sid, what would your training program be? He'd say, take one of my tapes and listen to it. Because every word I'm speaking is pointing you toward that quiet within. your exploring that space is way more valuable than anything you're going to find in the outer world. I'm still learning that lesson deeper and deeper. It's a beautiful lesson. I love your answer, Michael. It's really good advice for any of us, even those who come on the retreat. The other day I asked a client, are you alive? I really mean this. I really mean this. Are you alive? And don't answer that until you know. And they stopped, paused, and then said yes. In between the question and their saying yes, they touch that space that we're all looking for. It's so ordinary, it's so available, we miss it all the time, we fall into it all the time. It's just right there. It has nothing to do with the intellect. It's a recognition, it's consciousness recognizing itself, knowing that we're alive, that we're aware, that we're present, that we're experiencing. I'd recommend this to anybody. Once you know what you're looking for, it's just a matter of resting in that space. No words. Can't find it outside of ourselves. Can't get it from anybody else. For me, that's ecstasy. That moment of recognizing just being. That's why the simplest injunction for all of us is just be yourself. Just be. Because a moment, you can't be thinking and experience being. And when you experience being, you're not thinking. You've gone beyond your conceptual mind. And in that being, there's pure freedom. There's no suffering. There's no future. There's no past. There's no present moment. There's just presence. So moving toward greater understanding is moving from this notion that we're a person to the experience of being a presence. That's the bath. Be the presence that you are is the bath. And it doesn't matter if you're high or low, Jackie. It has nothing to do with high or low. You can be low as shit and be present and in this knowing, in the now, in this experience of the screen untouched by whatever thoughts or feelings or experiences. It's what everybody in the world is looking for. Everybody, and they don't know it's that ordinary, that simple, that available, that always present presence. The knowing that we know, the experience of which is being at peace with this moment as it is, and that's what everybody's looking for.
No, I thank you. And by, the real reason I want to do it so bad is you guys are just so much fun to play with. And I love, yeah. But what I'm seeing is that it's if that's from being deeply in this conversation, the only way for me to have it is not to go someplace where somebody else is having it and I attend. What I have not done with any commitment is to begin to generate those conversations with people myself. So if I want to be in that conversation, having that glorious connection, it might be time for me to stop shopping for it.
Yeah, I know, I know. We're such seekers. It's not in the conversation. You won't find this in the conversation. It has nothing to do with the conversation. I can't find it in a relationship. You see, the ego is always looking for some object that it thinks will give us happiness, peace, well-being. So we look for experiences, we look for people, we look for situations, we look for books, we look for teachers, right? There's no end to that search. And at a certain point, you can exhaust yourself in that search. At a certain point, you just get tired of searching for anything. And then there's a moment of rest, presence. And the cosmic joke is, you are what you've been searching for. You already have it in spades. There's nowhere to go to get it. When I'm in that, I'm not looking for conversations or relationships. Those things just happen naturally. It's just life happening around me and me doing life. But if I'm thinking about those things, I get lost. I get lost. It's so easy to get lost in our ideas, in things, looking for things that are going to do it. Looking for experiences that are going to do it is looking for objective experience, some experience I can have that's going to do it for me. This is, Sid would say, step before the five senses, step before your experience. That's where you'll find the peace that passes understanding. It has nothing to do with experience, with doing, with relationships, with people. It's in the knowing that you are in this moment, and that's the last place we tend to look.
I want to make sure that we have a chance to answer everyone's questions. Diana has had her hand up for a long time. So,
yeah. Well, let's go to Diana. Can you put your camera on for us, Diana, if you can?
Hi. Yes. Hello.
Hello.
So great to see all of you. I already feel what's going to happen there. As I got to spend time individually, not necessarily with Natasha, but with both of you, Neil and Michael. So my quick question is, it's kind of on the same line with Jackie's, being, wearing all those hats that I'm wearing as a mom, as a worker, as an entrepreneur, as, I don't even know, wife, priest wife, all kind of stuff. I find myself that looking for this place where I can just quiet my mind. It's becoming almost an, I don't want to say it's an impossible mission, because I get into that, I drop into it, but I would like to ask you how can I effectively do this while I have to do all the other pieces that are coming towards me all the time? And you know, things that I'm making probably myself do, thinking that I need to make money. Yes, I do have to do that. It's like I love to do that in a better way than another. But there are so many things that I get triggered, and how can I stay in that place and also respond to all those demandings?
Well, for me, first of all, is to recognize that you are none of those hats.
I'm none of them. Okay.
None of them. Who you are is not a, in essence, is not a mom or a, you know.
Yeah.
So the more that you realize your true essence, who you really are, the more each and every one of those different behaviors or roles that you play in life will be informed by your knowing who you are. The more that you don't focus so much on all these concepts or constructs that are really limiting you, the more you gain access to your wisdom that really guides you beautifully and has done all your life. So you, by you know, having all these thinking about, I must do this and I have to do that, and it really limits the light that you already are. The only thing that keeps the light from shining bright is all the thinking that we cover it with. So by going back to recognizing who you already are, it's not something that we can, you know, even make happen for you. It's a recognition of what's already there. The more you see that, the more every other part of your life just gets easier, better. You'll be guided through life beautifully, intelligently by the universal mind, by this intelligence behind all of life that has been creating you and creating every idea that you have like it does for everyone else. And it guides you perfectly when you just get out of the way.
And if I can just give a visual for what Natasha just said, like the question as I heard it is, how do I be present while I'm wearing my husband hat and my radio show host hat and my author hat? And it's like, I don't go anywhere, ever. Love doesn't go anywhere, ever. We just get distracted by our hat.
Okay. Thank you. It helped me a lot.
I just throw myself into the moment, throw myself into the situation, and I make a mess of things, and I do things well, and I just show up and do the best I can.
Yeah.
If I start thinking about how to be, if I start thinking about to be a witness or awareness of my experience, if I start thinking about the principles, I'm not in the situation. Right? I'm in a world of separation rather than in it. So you just throw yourself into the moment and do the best you can.
Thank you.
And that takes the pressure off. You get to be an ordinary person finally, and you'll see that as you have deeper insight, you do things differently. But you can't do things differently until that happens. So you don't worry about it. So you feel anxious, throw yourself into that. I watch my grandkids; they feel whatever they're feeling without all kinds of thinking about it. So they're just at peace with what's happening because they're not imagining something different and better. So throw yourself into those situations, those roles. Enjoy the heck out of just being yourself as you are, the good, the bad, and the ugly. You'll be amazed on how it opens up and evolves.
Okay, next up, let's go to the wonderful Nicola Burge.
Hello.
Hello.
Mine's sorry, is a really practical question. Michael, I know I've been to this place before, and you forgot to say the best selling point is the amazing massages they do there, which is definitely, never anywhere in the whole world have I had a better massage than that place. But I can't remember. I read Dickens' book last year, got really inspired, put together a retreat called the Quiet Mind Retreat that I'm doing with John that happens the day after yours. And so I can't remember the logistics of what airport and how long it takes to get there to try and work out if I could get back in time afterwards. Because I love the idea of coming, spending 4 days in a bath with you guys, and then coming back to my clients from that straight into another 3 days with them. I think it might work.
I don't remember flight times to London, but it's LAX is going to be your closest international. And it's, you know, anywhere from 1.5 to 3 hours. So I would assume 3. And we finish lunchtime on the Sunday.
Okay.
So essentially, if you can get a flight anytime, I would say from 6 p.m. on, then yeah, you're fine.
Okay, I have to work out with the time difference and everything.
Yeah.
Okay, Sorry, that was all. It was a really practical question.
That's a very legitimate practical question.
I couldn't remember. Thank you.
Okay, next up, let's go to Christy. Go ahead, Christy.
Hi. So I'm interested in hearing what any of you have to say about seriousness. I think if you talk to my dad, he would tell you that I was born serious. I know it's not true. Well, actually, I don't know. That's not true. I probably wouldn't be asking the question. But I'd just like to hear, like, because that's kind of the thing that can happen for me. His stuff starts to look real serious. That's the thought on top of thought that occurs for me. And I'm open to hearing what you've seen with clients or what you would have to share about seriousness.
I think it's a very serious problem. I do. I love Bill Pettit. Says that seriousness is one of the most widely undiagnosed mental illnesses. Yeah. I had a client, you may know this story because you hung out with me a bunch, but we're out on this glorious golf course. We're doing kind of coaching by golf, and we're somewhere around the 10th hole. He turns to me, and this is a very serious guy. And he says, "Do you think I need to be more serious?" And I burst out laughing because I assumed he was kidding. And then realized he was serious. So I tried to put my serious face on. And I said, "What? Why would you want to do that?" And he said, "Well, so people take me seriously." And I realized that there's some confusion between taking what we do to heart, like in other words, throwing ourselves into it, and frivolity, right? That we think that seriousness is both a function of how seriously we take what we do and how seriously we take ourselves, but those are two completely separate things, right? If I take my thinking seriously, if I take myself seriously, I am in for a world of hurt. And it's a world I know well because I've done it many times. But to bring a lightness of touch and a lightness of heart to what we do does not mean we don't care about it. Does not mean we don't care deeply about it. Does not mean we won't do anything in our power to make a difference in the arena we're making a difference in as best we can. It's just that nobody does life better carrying a 70-pound backpack filled with rocks. And that's what seriousness is. It only counts if it's hard. So that's what it looks like to me. It's a backpack that we learn to carry around with us at some point. And maybe we learn to take one or two of the rocks out and add a couple of different rocks over the years. But we take the carrying of the backpack for granted. And it does nothing for you except provide you with a feeling of relief in those moments where you put it down.
I've just noticed that through the years, the seriousness that I used to have a lot more of has just dissolved. It's not a matter of doing something about it. It's not a matter of trying to get rid of it or trying to analyze where it comes from or if I'm born with it or if it's my genes. Or it's just the more that I look in this direction and keep seeing again and again the truth of who I am, this light comes out. The when the clouds part, sun shines through them. So there's really nothing to do. It's continuing to looking in this direction, which sounds like a doing, but it's really what has been going on for me and so many clients is just the more that they see that, the more light just comes out. It really is in the eyes. And the lightness, I just laugh much more. It's things are easier. So for me, it's really about, again, recognizing our true nature. And then everything else seems to dissolve from that.
So I'm aware we're sort of coming towards the end of our time. So a couple of things. One, if you want to read about the retreat and hear how we put it in words, for whatever reason, you're welcome to. It's michaelneal.org/silentmind. Two, if you have any more questions that come up, if you send them via support@michaelneal.org, then we'll find a way to answer those kinds of practical questions. Third, if you're somebody who needs to convince yourself with even more data points, we'll send you a link to the podcasts that Dick and Natasha and I did. There's a series that we're airing this week of little podcasts where we talk about these things in different ways. But mostly just to say that those of you who join us, we really look forward to meeting you and spending time with you and bathing with you in a really respectful, not creepy way. And I just want to open up a minute or two for Dick and Natasha if they have any final thoughts to share. But thank you all for coming.
I can't wait. I was just waiting, seeing if Dick wanted to say something, because I'm just excited. And for each conversation we have, Michael, around this, both the three of us when we do podcasts and this and just talk about it, I get more and more excited. I can't wait. I hope to see.
I'm glad there's some people here that are not coming, and I'm glad you were able to be with us today. And I love that you continue to listen to see what more you can see about how ordinary and simple and beautiful this is. That I love these the screen view where everybody shows up and I can see everybody's faces as we're talking. So good to see everybody. And if I get to see some of you at a future point, that'll be great too.
And yeah, whoever it was who asked, yes, we're going to send out the replay of this as well so you can listen back to it.
Yeah.
All right, all. Lots of love. Thank you very much. Talk to you soon.
Okay. So, unmute you. Goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.